I'm John, he's Patrick.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to The Functional Nerds. This is going to be episode number 216.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. He's a Hugo Award-winning podcaster for the SF Signal podcast. You can check out his website, atfmb.com. Follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anelio. I am a podcaster and a musician. You can check out my music and other things over at johnanelio.com and follow me on Twitter at John Anelio. And today we are happy to be joined by Rajan Khanna. He's a fiction writer, blogger, reviewer, and narrator. His first novel, Falling Sky, a post-apocalyptic adventure with airships, is just released from Pyre back in October. His short fiction has appeared in Lightspeed Magazine, Beneath Ceaseless Skies, Shimmer, and several other anthologies. His articles and reviews have appeared at Tor.com and LitReactor.com. And his podcast narrations can be heard at Podcastle, Escape Pod, Pseudopod, Beneath Ceaseless Skies, and Lightspeed Magazine. Rajan lives in New York, where he's a member of the Altered Fluid Writing Group. Rajan, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you guys for having me.
And now, Altered Fluid, is that the one with Matt Kressel? Is he...
Matt's part of our group. There's a lot of people in the group. Mercurio Rivera, Chris Dykeman. I mean, we have about 12 members. Sam Miller, Rick Bowes. I'm going to not be able to mention everyone, but it's a great writing.
You fail.
Yeah, I know. Somebody's going to be like, you didn't mention me. But no, it's an amazing writing group. I think I've been in it now for like 7 years. It's amazing.
Now, how does that work? Was that something that you joined when you got there? Did you help start it? Like, what do you guys do? Do you guys just kind of critique each other's work, or what are some of the things that you guys do in that group?
Yeah, it's a critiquing group, and it was already in full speed when I joined. I basically knew of them when I started meeting people in New York, and I wanted to join, and it took me maybe about a year or so for them to have an opening. But the idea is whenever we have two people who have stories and we can all meet, we get together. Everyone reads both stories and we go round robin and critique them pretty much in the Clarion style, if people are familiar with that. So you get like 3 minutes to give your impressions of the story, good and bad, and what suggestions you might have. And, like I said, from 7 years ago, I've been in this group. It was instrumental, I think, in helping me grow as a writer.
Cool. Yeah. Now, do you think this kind of led to you getting your novel published? Do you think being part of that group helped make you a better writer in order to finally get your first book published?
It definitely did. I mean, I would not be where I am today if not for the group. Basically, it's funny because this came out of directly came out of my experience at Clarion West, also back in 2008. So between that critique group and the critique group I'm in now, it's kind of grown over the years. And the unfortunate thing was that this particular book came together so quickly that my writing group, my current writing group, Altered Fluid, didn't actually get a chance to critique it. So I basically submitted it a bit blind. And I'm happy that Pyre decided that it was okay. But, and obviously I worked with an editor there, Lou Anders. But, I'm hoping that with future books, I'll definitely have the time to have the group weigh in on it because, it's always helpful.
Are there going to be further books based on the first book, or is this a standalone? Or
there are. Okay. I can't really announce anything at the moment, but my plan is to write 2 more books at least. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good. Might as well get going right into our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Rajan, why don't you go first with your pick?
Yeah, I was thinking about what I would recommend, and a lot of what I read, whether it be comics or books or whatever, is usually old, and I'm catching up on things that are 2 years out of date. But one of the most recent things I read, which I was really impressed by was a second book in a series. It's called The Shotgun Arcana by R.S. Belcher. Mm. It's a weird Western, and the first book in the series was The Six-Gun Tarot. And, you know, I'm a big weird Western fan, and there's not a lot of books that come out on a regular basis that feed that need. So that series is great. I mean, it's basically like it has a little bit of everything. There's it's almost like an urban fantasy book set in the West. But, you know, he doesn't just pick like werewolves or vampires or whatever. There's all kinds of things thrown in there. The second book is a bit darker than the first one, but they're basically set in this Western town of Golgotha. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of like how I describe it to people. It's like the Hellmouth from Buffy, but like in the Western frontier. And so all kinds of crazy stuff happens. And he has like this amazingly huge cast. I mean, it's very kind of Whedon-esque in that way. And everyone in the cast is pretty, cool and, you know, powerful, and half of them are women. And so it's a pretty diverse book. And so I recommend that to anyone who's interested in weird Westerns.
Cool. Yeah. We were supposed to have him on the show, and we had like miscommunication. So we're trying to get him back on the show soon because, I don't know, very rarely sometimes, a lot of times I try to contact people directly, and this was like through one of the publicists, and there was, I don't know, miscommunication, and we weren't able to get him on, but hopefully we'll be able to get him on soon to talk about the book, because I think those books look really cool. So they're definitely on my to be read yeah. list. Cool. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
Well, I just wanted to throw it out there. If you're interested, I have a short story called Consumption that's set in the West, sort of, 1800s Americana. And three guys at dental school go off to look into the rumors about a mummy.
Huh. Where is that?
It's on Kindle.
Okay, cool.
So like 99 cents. My pick this week, John, is going to be, since it is the holiday season and I want to spread holiday cheer, I'm going to go with A Twisted Christmas, which is the Twisted Sister Christmas album.
Oh, very good.
Yes. You haven't lived until you've heard them do Oh Come All Ye Faithful to the tune of We're Not Gonna Take It.
He's really, Dee Snider has really milked that over the past couple of years. Like he goes out and tours behind that. And I kind of admire Dee Snider in some ways. I admire him for not being as artsy fartsy as a lot of musicians are, because he's like, look, I wrote all my best songs 20 years ago, 30 years ago. We'll go out in the summer for a couple weeks. We'll play We're Not Going to Take It. And we'll make a couple bucks, and then I'll go do this Christmas thing, and the rest of the year I'll do other stuff. But you know, no one's buying music anymore anyway. So
right. So I mean, he goes out and he's like, "Oh, come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant," and he just does it all to the, you know, "We're not gonna take it." It's kind of cool. So
cool. You know, along the same lines, one of my favorite Christmas songs of recent years is, it's called Don't Let the Bells End, and it's by The Darkness. And The Darkness was like that metal band from, I don't know when they had like that. They had a hit called, I believe, in a thing called Love about, I don't know, 7-8 years ago now. And they're very campy, and they're English. And I think they're really good. I think they're really talented. But they have a great Christmas song called Don't Let the Bells End, and it's sort of along the same lines. If you like sort of heavy metal Christmassy stuff, it's kind of the same thing. But my pick this week is going to be this book. It's called 10% Happier, and it's by Dan Harris, who is the he's an anchor on some of the ABC News programs. And it's called 10% Happier: How I Tamed the Voice in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Actually Works, A True Story. That's kind of a mouthful, that title. But it's basically about his experience with meditation. And I really liked this book a lot because I am very, you know, cynical, and I'm an atheist, and, you know, I don't generally buy into a lot of it, but I have been very interested in a lot of this stuff lately. And, you know, he takes this from a very cynical point of view and from a very scientific point of view. And so if you're someone who is kind of interested in some of the Zen stuff and, you know, sort of interested in meditation, but maybe think it's a little weird, which I do, but he really talks about it from, like I said, from a very scientific point of view and how, you know, it affects your brain and everything. And yeah, I got a lot out of this book. So yeah, it's called 10% Happier by Dan Harris. So check it out if you're interested in that kind of thing. All right. So let's get on to it. So, you know, one of the things, because when this episode airs, it'll be just a couple weeks or a week and a half or so before the holiday season. So the first thing we want to talk about is some holiday movies and some other media, too. Patrick mentioned some music, but maybe we could talk first about movies. So Roger, when I emailed you about some potential things to talk about, you said you're a big fan of the holidays and holiday stuff. So What is it? I mean, obviously, I think most people enjoy this time of year, but what is it specifically about the holidays that, you know, would make you announce that I'm a big fan of the holidays, you know?
I think it's, you know, it's interesting because I grew up in a very non-religious household. Like, mm-hmm. my parents weren't against religion, but they just weren't, you know, we didn't go to church and things like that. But my mother was really big into the holidays. And so, you know, every December, you know, it was like a holiday store exploded in our house. There was, you know, stuff up everywhere, lights and trees and decorations. And it was always such an exciting time, I think, especially as a kid, because of that. There's music playing all the time. And so there, you know, it was just, I think all those trappings kind of got their hooks in me when I was a kid. And so, like, even now, I feel like there are these rituals that I go through, you know, watching certain movies, listening to certain, you know, music. And, I guess that's part of what it is. It's kind of like a ritual. But I was thinking about it today. I think that even though I'm not religious, like the basic message behind the whole Christmas thing, you know, I'm definitely into. And I watched a Muppet Christmas Carol the other day. But you know, I've
it's not read, easy being green.
I've read A Christmas Carol and I've watched a bunch of the movies, and I really think that's an amazing book. And, you know, just again, the message embodied in that about what Christmas is and about, you know, kind of bringing us out of, you know, maybe our more material mindsets, you know, to something that's more about generosity and giving and things like that, I think is always a good, it's always a good, reminder every year for me. So yeah, I guess that's part of what it is.
Well, and I think being in New York is probably one of the best places to be this time of year too. There is something about New York at during the holiday time. It makes you feel good. My dad is, they live in Delaware now, my parents, but I grew up in New Jersey. My parents grew up in New York, and he was an electrician for, like, you know, 30, 40 years. And he was a union electrician in New York and, you know, commuted into the city every day. And
I would have been more surprised if you'd said he wasn't a union electrician in New York.
Yeah. I don't think you can be a non-union electrician in New York, really. You know, so my dad, he worked for so long that he worked every borough, you know, so if you go through the city with my dad, it would just be like, oh, I worked on that building and I worked on that building and I put the lights on that bridge. And I, you know, if you work for long enough, you end up, you know, it's kind of seeing all five boroughs and being pretty acquainted with everything. So we would always go in, especially, you know, around Christmas time. And I always love it. It's kind of the perfect place to be. Everybody's in a good mood and I love it. So, I could certainly understand that, but, you know, to get kind of to, let's talk a little bit about movies first, because there's lots of great holiday movies. So Roger, if you had to pick your favorite, what would it be?
Yeah, I definitely have a favorite, which is, it's interesting because I have a conflict about being so into this movie, but basically my favorite Christmas movie is Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, which, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have seen it, but there are still some people out there who've never heard of it. But it's basically a Jim Henson production that doesn't have really the traditional Muppet cast, and it's based on a book by Russell Hoban, I believe, who also wrote some science fiction, which is kind of interesting. But it's basically the Gift of the Magi story told about an otter family living in a small riverside town. And I love the music. I love it. I think I saw it when I was a kid on like HBO or something.
Yeah.
And you know, years later I was able to find it on video and DVD, and I watch it every year. It's definitely my favorite. And the songs are pretty awesome.
I just read a book. It's funny because the title of the book is misleading. I believe it's something called like Make Art, Make Money. It's a very like, you know, kind of businessy how-to title, but really what it is, and the name of the author, it escapes me right now, and I just read it about a month or two ago, but it was analyzing Jim Henson's career and how he was able to kind of stick true to his artistic impulses, but be successful business-wise and financially too, and how he did have to compromise a couple times in order to make money. So they did actually have like a long section about Evan Otter's Jug Band Christmas in there, and talking about, you know, buying the rights to that book and making sure that it was made the right way. And, you know, his whole thing was what was the sort of the business side of making his art was, you know, the research and development, meaning like you had to have that many puppeteers and puppet makers and all the things that went into it, you had to have a lot of time that was spent just kind of playing and right. playing around and experimenting. And that's why all the Muppet stuff and the Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, it still holds up because there was an incredible amount of work and time put into developing those characters and those stories and those songs. You mentioned the songs too, like they would hire a couple of songwriters and they would work really hard to write really good songs. And again, we remember those songs still too. And it was hard from a business point of view, because anytime like a businessman would come and look, they're like, "Ooh, you can't spend this much time on it." And he's like, no, we're going to do it anyway. It's fine. And, you know, they talk about how the big deal that he made was with Sesame Street, but he owned the rights to all those characters. So they made a lot of money selling toys, which he was kind of against at first. But then I guess his agent sold him and just said, "Look, if we sell the toys, we're going to make enough money where you could sort of be in control of what you do with it." And what was kind of cool about it was that he had sort of final say over what toys they put out. So they were a much higher quality, more educational kind of toys than would have been otherwise, rather than just selling the rights to Fisher-Price, which I think they attempted to do at one point, and they made a really crappy thing. And he's like, no, we're not doing it that way. We're making good stuff. But that's a really, I'll have to get the full name and everything else with it, because it's a really interesting, like I said, from the title of the book and the cover, it just seems like a business book, but it goes really in depth into choices that he made, and he worked in commercials for a long time. And and he was very subversive too. We kind of forget about that with Jim Henson sometimes, but you know, there's a lot of sort of nods to other people in the creative world and agents and things like that.
Yeah, I'd love to read that. I actually went to an exhibit a couple years ago at the Museum of the Moving Image in Queens, in New York, and they basically did a retrospective on all his work, and they showed like one of his early student films, like, you know, which was nothing to do with puppets at all. It was really kind of surreal and kind of just interesting. But it showed the evolution through Emmett Otter to the Muppet Show to the movies. Jim Henson is one of my heroes. Like, I think he was a genius. So in a way, you know, revisiting that movie every year is kind of brings me back to that place of inspiration as well. And if anyone, I don't know if the DVD is still available, but the DVD has a lot of like behind the scenes stuff where you see, they talk to the people who like made the different puppets, and they basically built a small scale town where they could, you know, use little miniature things on it. And then they had like, you know, large scale. I mean, it's just the going behind the curtain of those things is always fascinating to me.
Yeah, definitely. Patrick, I can't believe we've gotten this far into a conversation about Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas and you haven't sang the River Bottom Nightmare Band song yet. I feel like you've sang that at least three or four times on the show over the years.
I don't even think I know what the movie is, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
You haven't, I feel like you always sing the River Bottom Nightmare. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm thinking of something else here. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the River Bottom Nightmare Band was sort of the metal band that was, you know, the main competition to Emmett and his mom in that. But, you know, it's funny because, Roger, that you bring that up, because I watch that movie every year too, but it was on HBO, and I don't know if it was ever shown on like regular TV, or if it was, it was many years later. So there are certain things, whereas if you had HBO, you saw it, as well as Fraggle Rock, and the book gets into that too, about Fraggle Right. Rock, how that was on HBO, but it was also co-funded by a Canadian company. So it was shown in Canada on regular TV, on like public TV, and ran a little bit longer, I think, in Canada. So if you're Canadian or in certain parts of Canada, you saw a lot more Fraggle Rock than we did in the States, at least in the 80s. But yeah, it's really kind of interesting. And again, that was a thing where the cost of the show was going to be so much that they kind of had to have two different groups funding it in order to do it the way that they wanted to, because otherwise it really wouldn't have flown. So they were able to sort of double dip, but they, you know, everyone got a good product out of it for sure.
Yeah. Speaking of different versions, I mean, and the HBO thing, when I saw it for the first time growing up, it was introduced by Kermit the Frog, which was a later addition, I believe. Like originally they just filmed the movie and then they added Kermit at the beginning and the end to kind of introduce it, I think, which was probably smart because that, you know, people were like, oh, I know Kermit. Like, you know, that'll help attach me to this. But yeah, I was just thinking, it's funny, you know, the whole progression of my love for Jim Henson, which probably started back then and with The Muppet Show. And one of my favorite science fiction TV series of all time is Farscape, and the Henson, I mean, Jim Henson himself wasn't involved in that, but Henson Company was a big part of that too. So I guess it's like, you know, continues in my life in certain ways. So yeah.
Yeah, same here. I'm a big Farscape fan too. I didn't get into it until about a year or two ago, just watching it on Netflix. But yeah, there's something about the kind of practical effects and puppetry that I don't know, really. And the creatures on Farscape were very Henson creatures. I mean, you could really tell. I mean, it wasn't. They weren't. You know, it wasn't Kermit, but it was, you know, you could tell that they were made, you know, they sort of come from the same DNA, I think. And yeah, I think that sort of gave Farscape a lot of its, you know, sort of likability. It was such a weird show too, when you think about it.
When it launched, it was dismissed as Muppets in Space.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. And really, I always think, you know, when we talk about Farscape, I always feel like my experience watching it, because I watched it on Netflix and I barely got through the first season and I kind of stopped watching it, and everybody was like, just keep going. Cause once you get kind of about midway through the second season, then it rules and it's great for how it was 4 or 5 seasons, I guess. I'm not sure how long it was, but, and it's true. I had to like kind of trudge through a couple of episodes, cause think back to when that was first showing, it's kind of before we have this overall story arc television, you know, people, TV was still kind of more one shot, and they eventually kind of got into doing a longer story arc. But in the first season or two, there's a lot of sort of standalone episodes that are kind of, you know, not as good as the ones that sort of tie into the overall, in my opinion, at least anyway. So, I think nowadays, I think if you were to do a show like that, I think out of the gate, you're pretty much doing one long story, because that's the way that people tend to watch shows now, at least it's the way that I watch them now anyway. Patrick, what do you have in terms of a favorite holiday movie?
Pretty much all the classics. So Die Hard, Gremlins, The Hogfather is a great one. Usually that comes up on Netflix about this time of year and you can get it. Christmas Vacation.
Oh, yeah, of course.
A Christmas Story.
Yep.
Guy I work with actually has the leg shame thing. He took pictures and brought it and showed us. And then, of course, you can't have Christmas without Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. So
clearly not. You know, what's sort of weird about the Gremlins, and I was listening to Adam Carolla's podcast the other day, and they bring this up from time to time, and you forget about it. There's a scene in Gremlins where Phoebe Cates' character tells this story about, you know, how her dad was pretending to be Santa Claus, and like, you know, her dad went missing for like a week or two around Christmas time, and they didn't know where he was, and then they thought there was a squirrel chimney, and it ended up being their dad. And it really kind of has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. It's just this bummer, weird, dark story in the middle of the movie for really no reason. And it's like, that's really weird that they kept that in there. Like,
you know, I saw it recently again, and it's a dark movie, and that story particularly, like, I think he was up in the chimney for like days before they found him, you know, like rotting in their chimney in a Santa Claus costume. I mean, and I always thought of Gremlins as more of as a kid's movie, but it's really not. It's quite scary.
It was definitely marketed towards kids because I don't know if I saw that in the movies or if I just saw it on cable when it came out a year later. But I remember it's funny. I have an 8-year-old son and I'm a teacher of kids that age too. So we tend to police what our kids see or you know, I think it's also just there's a lot more entertainment made for kids these days, whereas 20, 30 years ago, maybe not as much. So I think parents were a little more like, yeah, that's, and also the ratings too. I don't know if that was before the PG-13 rating was about, because I don't know what that was rated. My guess is that it was rated PG, but nowadays that would definitely be a PG-13. 'Cause like that is kind of not an appropriate movie for 7 and 8 year olds, you know. It's probably geared more towards an older crowd, but you know, my parents had no problem just like, yeah, whatever, that's fine. Just don't say those words in school, or don't, you know, don't try to light anything on fire or anything. But yeah, Gremlins is a weird one. I remember even at the time thinking it was kind of an odd movie. Like I remember being really grossed out by the Mogwais eating the fried chicken in that one scene.
Oh, yeah.
I just remember thinking that was like really gross.
And a lot of people forget that Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Absolutely. You know, I've seen it sort of come up the past couple of years when these sort of polls for favorite Christmas movie start showing up on the blogs. I start seeing Die Hard show up and you're like, yeah, that's right. That's totally a Christmas. Now, was that released at Christmas time?
Yeah, because he comes to California with the Christmas present for his wife. You know, she invites him to come to California, and he's like, there's that scene where he goes, he's like muttering to himself, "Come to California for Christmas, John. You'll have a great time."
Right.
You know, and meanwhile, he's all cut up and bleeding, and he's got his gun, and he's lost his shoes, and all that kind of shit. And,
well, I know it takes place during that time, but
I believe it was. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, because it's funny. I wonder if, because obviously that was a very successful like blockbuster action movie, because that would so totally be a movie released in the summer now. And I wonder if they had lower expectations for it, releasing it at, although I guess they do release a lot of big movies.
Actually,
Christmas
you know what?
Time.
You're right. According to this, it was released in theaters on July 15th, 1988.
Interesting. So a Christmas themed movie released in July, but you know, you could still enjoy that movie in July, too. My favorite is the one that Patrick alluded to before we started the podcast today. And that is A Christmas Story, which is shown on a loop. And I do at this time of year. And, I did see that in the movie theaters. Now I'm 40 years old, so that puts it at I don't know what year that was released, but I was probably like 10 or so, I guess, when that came out. And Patrick's gonna look that up right now to make sure. I was born in 1974, so we'll do the math on it. It was probably like 84 or 85, I bet.
83.
So I was 9. I had my uncle and his wife were a little bit younger than my mom. And so my sister and I would go out. They lived in Co-op City in the Bronx. And my parents would drop us off to them, and they didn't have any kids at the time. So they would take us to do cool stuff. So we always went to the movies when we were out there. So I guess they dropped us off around Christmas time, and we just went to go see that movie because that's what it was. And then it really still holds up. You really do. I mean, it's a pretty tight movie in terms of the writing and the jokes. The jokes all hold up too. So I love that one.
Well, and his one best friend grew up to be a porn star.
Right.
Bob Clark directed it, and he also did all the Porky's movies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Wow.
It's so funny because we would nowadays it's kind of hard for. And I'm sure, you know, even as a writer, this happens too. And this is why a lot of times writers will have pseudonyms sometimes, you know. It's like, well, I write under this name for my science fiction, and I write under this name for my fantasy. Because we tend to, or there is a segment of the population or a segment of the people that sell stuff that it's like, oh, no, you're known as this kind of a director. And no way would nowadays they let the guy who directed A Christmas Story do Porky's, or I think Porky's was first probably.
They would never let Porky's. According to this, he did Porky's, Porky's 2, and then A Christmas Story. And then there's not really anything else. Well, he did Amazing Stories. And then there's not really anything else until that I recognize until he gets to Baby Geniuses in 1999. I kind of sort of remember that movie.
Yeah, I do too. But yeah, there's no way Hollywood, it would be very rare for Hollywood to greenlight the Porky's guy to do a holiday movie nowadays. I don't know if that would fly so well. He'd have to change his name or something. But, you know, Rajan, is that something that you've seen just being as a writer? I mean, I know your book, this is your first book, but you've done a lot of other work too. Do you find that something that you have to deal with or are considering deal or, you know, something that's on your mind in terms of like, are you going to be known as this kind of writer or this kind of writer or, you know, anything like, would you like to be able to write all sorts of different things? What's your feelings about that?
I mean, I definitely plan to write all sorts of different things and it has obviously crossed my mind. The first book that I basically, the book that got me an agent was a middle grade book. And I never really, you know, my leading up in my career, I thought I was going to be an adult science fiction fantasy writer, you know, and I wrote something that people said, I think that skews. Actually, I thought it would be YA, and my agent is like, no, that's middle grade. So when we worked on it together, it became middle grade, and it ultimately didn't sell at the time we sent it out. But there was a moment where I thought to myself, how do I feel about, you know, my first book being a middle grade book for kids? And, you know, that wasn't what I had always envisioned. But then, you know, like people who work in YA and middle grade, I talked to them and then I started getting really enamored with this idea of like, you know, kids who fall in love with books, you know, so deeply in a way, reaching kids at that age, I thought would be really exciting. And then ultimately that didn't happen and it ended up being this book, which is an adult book that it sounds weird when I say adult book. People are like, what do you mean by that? But I just mean for adult audiences. But you know, I thought about what I want to do pseudonyms because I want to do middle grade and because I want to do YA, and I'd like to avoid it if possible. And I know I'm not Neil Gaiman, but like Neil Gaiman publishes everything. He publishes young kids,
YA. I agree with you.
You know, I feel like he lets the audience figure it out, and you know, the parents of kids figure it out, and I'd rather do that too.
Me too. If I ever get published.
Yeah. So, great. You know, let's.
But
you know,
before you start wrapping it up, John.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to throw out there a little bit of trivia about Bob Clark. Bob Clark executive produced the Moonshine movie Moonrunners, which was used as source material for the TV series
Dukes of Hazzard.
The Dukes of Hazzard.
Ah.
He then later produced the 2000 TV movie The Dukes of Hazzard, Hazzard in Hollywood. Clark and others sued Warner Brothers over the studio's 2005 movie, The Dukes of Hazzard, winning a $17.5 million settlement.
Wow. Good for Bob Clark.
I know, right? I had no idea that he had done that. So. So,
some of the best products of the 80s, The Dukes of Hazzard, The Porky's Movies, and A Christmas Story. You can't, you know. Hey, I'd like to have that on my resume by the time I'm an older fella, but cool. Thanks for the Bob Clark tribute, Patrick. Mm-hmm. All right. Once again, so Rajan's book is out there now. It's called Falling Sky, and that's out through Pyre, and you can get that at your bookstores and on any of your ebook platforms and all that kind of jazz. Is there an audiobook for Falling Skies?
Not at the moment, unfortunately.
Now, I'm sure there's rights and stuff that you signed, because I know you've done some narration yourself. If you, would you do it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be the hope. You know, the audiobook rights are unsold right now, and if they do end up getting sold, you know, I think we'd try to see if I could do it, just because I think that would be fun. But, and, you know, I feel like there is something as a writer that you have more intimate knowledge of the source material, but that still has to be worked out if that's going to happen.
Well, and that's also a mixed bag, because over on SF Signal, we did a whole episode about audiobooks, and there's some split on whether or not people prefer to have the author read it or not, because sometimes it makes it more personal for them and it does connect them better to the story, and sometimes it doesn't.
Okay.
So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, no, there's definitely pros and cons to it, for sure. All right, Rajan, can you throw out your website and your Twitter for people so they could find you online?
Sure. The website is www.rajankhanna.com, RajanKhanna, and my Twitter is RajanYK.
Awesome. And you're going to be going to any cons upcoming that people could check you out?
I'm not sure about my con schedule for next year. I just kind of went through a few this year, but I might try to go up to BossCon in February. And for those who are in the New York area, I guess this is coming out on Tuesday. On Wednesday, the 17th, I'm going to be reading at the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series at the KGB Bar at 7 p.m. So if you're around and want to come down, Stephen Gould is the other reader, so it's not just me. But yeah,
cool.
That's next.
That's great. That's really good. So if you're in the New York area, go and check that out. Anything else you want to tell our listeners before we sign off today, Rajan?
Not really. I just hope that, you know, whatever holidays people celebrate, that they have a good one. Or if you don't celebrate a holiday, I hope you have a good December. And thank you guys for having me so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Excellent. Thank you, Rajan. Okay. For me, just check out my website, johnanilio.com. Follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
I have a couple of posts over at Kirkus that I just want to point people to. Number one is my review of Captain Marvel. Which is the Marvel version of the character Captain Marvel, and it's the Carol Danvers version of that character. So there's multiple Captain Marvels, including one over at DC, that they actually lost the rights to be able to call him Captain Marvel, and so that's why Marvel keeps publishing Captain Marvel books, because if they stop publishing Captain Marvel books, DC could get the trademark back for Shazam.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this whole big thing. Anyway, the Carol Danvers character, she goes off to fly off to space to spend some time with the Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a great book. Go check that out. And then I also have one up on Rocket Girl, which is a timey-wimey kind of thing, where a 15-year-old New York City teen detective, part of the New York City Teen Police Force in 2013, travels back in time to New York City of 1986 because she finds out that there's an evil corporation who has been changing the timeline. And she's going to save the world. So that's over at Kirkus. I want to remind people that John and I are going to be at Capricorn in February.
Absolutely.
So mm-hmm. Get your memberships for that. We're going to probably be talking a little bit more about that in coming weeks. But that is on our radar. And, of course, check out SF Signal for the podcast over there. We're doing great stuff, including gift guides this month and, like, roundup lists, what's our favorite stuff from 2014, that kind of stuff.
And I should also mention that Capricorn is in Chicago, in the Chicago area, at least. So if you're in the Chicago area,
the greater Chicagoland area.
The greater Chicago area. And Matt Forbeck is going to be there, and Stephen Jackson of Stephen Jackson Games is going to be there. And Patrick and I are the media guests of honor, which sounds very fancy. So we're happy to do. We'll be doing a live show from there, and it should be cool. So if you're in that area, or if you're not, fly out there. It'll be fun. Should do it anyway. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
for the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.